This is the May 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Naomi Bloom. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Ellen Dearden joins us from AgriView in Morton, Illinois. And Brian Stark is here from the Andersons in Champaign County, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. And there now you will find a special edition of Commodity Week recorded on Wednesday about trendline yield and some thoughts that Jerry Goodell, Dale Durkles have had. They discussed with the folks at USDA during the Data Users Group a couple of weeks ago. And we were also joined by Bob Nielsen, who is the corn guy, agronomist at Purdue University, emeritus. It's a great show. It's online at willag.org. Now let's continue our Commodity Week program for the day. Ellen Dearden of AgriView, thank you for being with us. What's on your list of items we should discuss this afternoon?
I think I'd like to be looking a little bit at weather. Certainly the next 10 days weather forecast is going to be pretty important in the I states, at least, which are tending to be pretty dry right now. And planting progress is picking up. And how's that going to affect emergence? So I'd like to look at that and also maybe look into some of the summer weather outlooks.
And Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I want to take a look at the seasonal aspects to corn and soybeans right now, along with the really promising technical indicators that the markets gave yesterday between corn, beans, and wheat, along with some important geopolitical events coming up over the next couple weeks.
And finally, Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think I'd like to focus on looking at old and new crop on both commodities, corn and beans, and how they're telling two different stories, how the producers need to manage their risk, as well as incorporating demand and whether it'll come back on the corn front.
Well, let's start with demand. What are you feeling in the demand pull for corn and soybeans in the area that you serve? That runs all across the eastern part of Illinois and in through central Indiana.
I think right now everybody's fixated on export corn demand and how up and down and sluggish it's been to begin the crop year. And we're already halfway through. And obviously with China canceling a couple of the recent purchases here, it doesn't give a lot of faith here next Friday that the government won't make an adjustment or have to cut corn export demand. But there's also been talk with ethanol demand being sluggish as well. And I'd like to, I guess, mention from my perspective that, you know, we saw another weekly stock draw. Obviously, demand production is running 2 to 3% behind last year, but we just saw record exports to Canada here for the month of March in ethanol. So we're finding other avenues where demand hasn't been necessarily seasonally as good, obviously through the wintertime for driving, but margins are very good. We're going through our spring shutdown, and I'm not, I guess, in the camp that I'm going to see a lot of cut there in the ethanol side. So really what it comes down to is the export equation. And I think the spreads, when you look at stocks year over year from the March report on the corn front, it seems like we're larger in the east than they are in the west. Certainly, that may be where we certainly see some sort of movement back and forth, trying to move from where they are to where they're not. And the spreads certainly tell the story, even with the board break, that the supplies are still tight, even with weak export demand. So that kind of leads into the old crop discussion, where producers, I think, even with the large washout from the funds here over the last 2 to 3 weeks, can afford to be patient. But I think it's a different dynamic of how they have to look at the new crop side when thinking about pricing ahead.
I do want to follow up with you. The Andersons, of course, owned by Marathon. I'm wondering if E15 summertime use really makes much of a difference in how much demand there is for corn and ethanol.
I don't know if it makes or moves the needle enough to say that, you know, we're going to see growing demand. There's certainly some demand aspects that we trailed year over year through the winter months that we're probably not going to recover. E15 will help in some regard recover some of that. But I really think the export side could be a opportunity for us, specifically with what we've been doing with Canada here over the last 30 days.
Ellen Dearden, I'd like to continue the old crop discussion, particularly for corn, the lack of corn in the Western Corn Belt. Of course, you follow very closely the feeder demands there. Are they really hunting for corn still?
They are still hunting for corn. There's been excellent rail movement out of Western Illinois into both Western Kansas and the Texas Panhandle. I don't know that we should be all that surprised that corn can move in directions we haven't anticipated before, but it seems to happen. All we have to do is see that basis pop and the movement starts. I also think another factor is the freight cost has gone down dramatically, but the feedlots that I talked to in Nebraska have been particularly pinched because ethanol demand for corn for ethanol has really held up rather well, while the feedlots are really, really scratching to find corn out of probably getting into the central Iowa area to source it.
Do you suppose that will hold corn prices for old crop, or at least support old price corn for old crop?
It'll support old crop corn flat prices, absolutely, and basis will probably make the move more so than the futures, although on Thursday's market, we did see the May and July futures on the plus side.
Naomi Bloom, how do you see this domestic consumption pattern continuing through the summer months?
Well, I think the correction that we've had in the marketplace priced in what he's talking about earlier in terms of our export demand being lower. With export sales this week, we're at 1.5 billion bushels for the 2022-23 crop year for what's been sold. USDA goal is 1.85. So, you know, we're behind pace. But again, July corn last week sold off 70 cents. So any increase of carryout or any reduction of demand that we see on the USDA report next week, it's priced in the market. And I think the market showed that yesterday when we put in those big bullish key reversals. It said, okay, now we're cheap enough. And I think that was a prime opportunity for end users of any capacity to step up and buy what's remaining for old crop. Because as we've been talking about, the ending stocks, at the end of the day, they're still tight here in this country. So for the places that need the corn, this recent sell-off, I think, has been your opportunity. The ethanol market, you know, starting to pick up steam again, and with those the stocks of ethanol down recently in the last couple of reports, and with the summer driving coming up, I think the ethanol story continues to be friendly.
So I want to ask you about some of the technical indicators. You said they were promising. However, old crop corn lead option put an outside down month in for April. Can you put them all in perspective for me?
Yep. So looking at the July corn contract, what we had yesterday, we had a bullish key reversal, and the market traded lower than essentially the previous day's low and the last few days' low, and then finished and traded higher than the previous few days' high. So from a technical perspective, that's a pretty strong indicator of support. Plus, the market had been actually testing the July low price from last summer. So a little bit of a double bottom on a chart. A nice technical indicator that way. On weekly charts, the market also had been extremely oversold. Stochastic lines starting to curve into a buy signal after, again, testing those support levels. Now, this doesn't mean we need to go rally higher and go see $8 corn or anything like that. But for me, it really makes me feel like that short-term bleeding that we had is done and the market needs to come up for air. Seasonally, that makes sense. Usually the market will so allow a couple opportunities as we head into early June for old crop sales and new crop sales with some higher prices.
I feel like this is one of those places where we could have differing views on this. Does anybody take the opposite view of this marketplace at this time, Ellen or Brian?
Well, I don't take the opposite view. I just think that our upside potential here this spring probably will be limited because of the large Brazilian safrina crop that's going to be competing with the U.S. crop. But I think people have really dialed in a potentially big 2023 U.S. corn crop too. So I even though I tend to be friendly, I'm looking at new crop opportunities in that 548, 558 area rather than looking back to 590 or 595.
And Naomi, I'll let you come back in with what you're thinking about how friendly this marketplace is in just a moment. But Brian, do you have a response?
No, I feel the same way. I kind of like what Ellen said. I think the damage has kind of been done. I think the weight of the bearishness currently in new crop kind of eliminates some of the potential upside to retest the upper $6 range on old. But, you know, cash prices are determined by futures and basis. And to Ellen's point earlier, basis is going to do a lot of the work. The spreads are going to do a lot of the work. I think the key, kind of alluding into separating the two, is while there's potential for upside, maybe more so through the basis and futures combo in old crop, I think Ellen's right. I think reestablishing new targets in new crop until there's some sort of weather incident, sell and defend type strategies as the market gives us some opportunities into early June in the new crop sector, I think is what producers really have to be nimble with, just simply because the trade is trading 92 million acres of corn and a 181 national yield, and certainly a long way to go before we achieve that. But until there's a change, the market is going to trade those type of numbers.
Naomi, now anything to add?
Well, just keep in mind, the seasonality of this marketplace suggests that first to second week of June, the party is over and done with. So whatever kind of a recovery bounce we can get over the next 2 to 4 weeks, make sure you're using that as an opportunity to make your cash sales for old crop and new crop and even be thinking about the 24 crop. Just that overall system and thinking for this marketplace has shifted. Bull markets don't last usually more than 2 years. And so if we have normal weather this summer, the perception that U.S. and global supplies will be larger will weigh on prices. So just be on your toes. That first week of June, a lot of times, is your last opportunity for those sales.
And Ellen Dearden, that brings us to weather and planting progress and the summer outlook. Which one do you want to take up first?
Let's take the near-term weather deals. Most of the weather people that I've been listening to, following in the last week or so, have really pointed out that we've got an upper-level high parked over Canada, is making things difficult to, that the models are showing great variability, not just for shower opportunities, but for the amount of rain in the next 10 days or so. And I think that there's a lot of folks that are pretty worried about corn that's been in the ground for 3 weeks, not emerging, and will that mean replant, all the above. Most the weather people seem to be in tune that the temperatures will be warm and stay warmer than normal over a widespread area. But the emergent situation seems to be a niggling factor in the back of a lot of people's minds. Now, as we go into summer, you know, less really, at least Eric Snodgrass is sure pointing out that less real summer weather, heat, and or extremely dry conditions seem to be in store for us this year.
I will point out that on the replant, there are a couple of notes. I have heard already of some April 13 and 14 corn planted in central Illinois being replanted, or at least the bags being put in place at this point. Emerson Napsiger a couple of weeks ago would remind producers that even if it comes up uneven, there are very few growing degree days that have piled up between those plants, and it may be worth letting them hang for just a second to see whether they catch up with each other. And on the other side of that coin, we talked with Purdue agricultural agronomist Bob Nielsen yesterday again for that Commodity Week program, in which he called last week's cold injurious. And I think he meant that the crop that would have been planted last week might have had some difficulty. So it may be the one that needs to be watched. We'll learn more about that as we go through time. Brian Stark, you've traveled a long ways across eastern Illinois into Logansport. How many miles is that? And how much of that crop do you think has been planted?
Roughly between Champaign and Logansport's about 100 miles. And I would say in general, corn in the Indiana side and Illinois, both in aggregate are behind bean planting. It's been the typical pattern the last 3 to 5 years for growers to get out and plant beans earlier. I think certainly with the colder temperatures, growers felt more comfortable proceeding with planting beans in cold soil versus corn. And so I think that's kind of been the lag. In general, we were probably 25% planted on the Indiana side in beans, and maybe 15 in corn. I think that rapidly advances given the progress and the amount of activity I saw today, driving back this afternoon with our highs finally getting back into the 70s. I think Illinois is probably a little further along than that. And the state average in corn was 40%, and I think East Central Illinois is probably in that ballpark area, maybe pushing 50. But beans certainly feel in the area that I cover further along with progress in corn dutch.
Right? And we'll check in with you, Naomi Bloom, there in West Bend. In that part of the world of Wisconsin, how much do you suppose is in the ground?
Nothing. There is nothing going on over here. We just got the snow to melt a couple weeks ago. Some of the big dairies around here finally were able to get all their manure pits emptied out because the fields had finally, thawed out, dried out enough for that. And there is nothing happening over here. So I had heard that in southwest Wisconsin, some planters were rolling there. Nothing, though, in the central, north central part of the state either. It is starting to get a little bit nerve wracking. Usually we can get going the second week of May, but it is just wet and soggy over here in the eastern part of the state.
Now, you would be in that area, that northern part of the weather systems. Are they calling for continued rain in your area?
We have chances of rain all weekend long this weekend, chances of thunderstorms, chances of rain. Thankfully for my forecast, I haven't seen any more snow, but it is a forecast where my clients in this area, I can hear it in their voices. They are just getting frustrated. They're getting a little nervous. They're getting a little edgy, and rightfully so. It's Wisconsin weather, though, for you.
It didn't help that in April, middle of April, beginning of April, in fact, that farmers in Illinois probably, they were hearing, were already out and planting. Ellen Dearden, near Peoria, there at Morton, what do things look like?
I would say probably 40%, maybe 50% done on corn. I don't know. My family is finished with soybean planting, but I would think we're probably 50% in this area on bean planting. There's a lot of variability. I did see on Wednesday my first corn that had emerged. And I know planters rolled here just a few days before Easter.
I know in central Illinois near Springfield, so I know 65 to 70 miles straight south of you where my family farms, they were in that second week of April, held off until this week to finish the corn up. They did have corn up before we went into the very cold weather. I think it just sat there mostly. I haven't been over or talked to my brothers to see exactly what that looks like. And then a lot of beans in as well in this East Central Illinois area, as Brian Stark mentioned. Speaking of Brian, you said this was a tale of two crops. We talked some about old crop. I want to talk a little bit about new crop, but risk management in both still needs to be in place. What are you suggesting to producers about the old crop corn that they have left to sell?
Well, hopefully most of the growers that listen in have taken out an 80 or 85% IP policy and crop insurance, because that's key. That's your revenue put. And obviously earlier this week, we tested down close to where the 85% level would trigger around 502. I think we got as low as 512.5. My point of bringing that up is, there's really no strong incentive for the grower today, not knowing what he's going to produce, to make sales in aggressive fashion. However, given the fact that we're trading 92 million acres of corn and a big yield, which the government's going to show this coming Friday, I think it is important, going back to Naomi's point, where you see seasonality rallies into the middle part of June for the grower to make some catch-up sales. And I think you can be a little more aggressive if we get up into the 550 area. I mean, we have to lower and reset our targets until the facts change. And I think starting to make sales there, if you haven't done much already, makes a lot of sense. And we can always look at defending those later on. I'm a firm believer of the type of min-max strategy using a revenue put. Maybe if you choose not to hedge the grain, you can sell an out-of-the-money call and use your insurance as kind of that floor with a price ceiling to at least do some activity on a rally to get something started, simply because the market, until there's a weather challenge or we get different information at the end of June, is going to trade a fairly sizable crop.
Now, Ellen, I know that our regular analyst, including you and Gary Schnitke, started in August of last year saying for new crop sales that the price was awfully good and that you ought to at least cover your input cost. I can tell you that I tried and did not manage to pull that off. So, like many others, we'll need to make some sales. And we just heard that Brian Stark is saying catch-up sales, and I think, Brian, maybe a little more. You didn't say how much, but maybe Ellen has an idea of how far along she'd like us to be.
I really think, given the seasonal situation and also the fact that we put in a major high last year, that we have to be pretty aggressive on this year's crop. I have no problem being 40 or 50% sold now. I'm not selling at 528 December futures. But I think that we really need to be aggressive sellers. I also think people need to keep in mind that with interest rates where they are now, operating loans doubled in the amount of interest you're going to pay. So most of these sales, if you're going to be using cash sales, need to be for that December, fall, December, January timeframe. Don't make them for a deferred delivery and be caught with not having enough capital to put another crop in the ground.
And Naomi Bloom, your suggestions?
Well, I actually really love what Ellen says. That's a huge point. And I would add to it that, you know, when we get this recovery bounce here over the next few weeks, do be very aggressive with those sales. Get absolutely up to 50% sold, a little bit more if you're comfortable with your crop and your crop insurance levels. And usually I'm not as overly aggressive with marketing, but I feel that this year, this is the year that with unpriced bushels, you're going to want to be priced out to nearly 100% of your total production, because the technical downside picture looks a little humbling. You know, when you look at what the wheat market has done, it went all the way back down to, you know, the lows from 2021, and there's no reason why corn couldn't do that too by harvest. So we're talking like the 450 level. So use this recovery bounce to your advantage and make sure you focus on the sales and get puts in place on unpriced bushels.
Well, we have yet to talk about new crop soybean sales. Naomi, I'll let you start.
Yeah, absolutely. Same concept, same idea. November beans, they had a really good bounce off that $12 area. The upside potential, just from a technical perspective, I'm thinking we can maybe get back up to the 1275 area. And again, that first week of June, you want to make sure that you've got your new crop priced out and get some hedges in place with puts or whatever type of option strategy or future strategy you're comfortable with that goes with your risk tolerance. But this is the year to be, I think, a little bit more aggressive.
In addition to any new crop sales that you're making for the 23 crop year, also be focusing on the 24 sales as well.
Ellen Dearden?
Yeah, I'm more aggressive, and two things have really triggered my thinking on the beans. One is I've been a meal bull, and that the meal price, after we had the beef house meeting, the meal price has really fallen. And we talked about that there, that was going to be the trigger that took the beans lower. And that happened. So I think that has been a factor for my selling program on this new crop beans. I've been a pretty aggressive seller already, but I'm willing to trigger more sales up around that $13 area basis the November futures.
And Brian Stark.
I would agree. I think I've always been a proponent of what I define min-max, which is, you know, simply in an option terminology, buying a put and selling on the money call to create a fence. I think either way, you have to look at establishing floors in the next 4 to 6 weeks when the market seasonally gives us a chance to rally. And I don't disagree with the percentages. I think in that 40 to 50% area, until more is known about acres and weather as we go through the growing season, we can always defend our sales. And I think we need to be protective this year, just given the outlook with what the other ladies have said here thus far.
Three more topics I'd like to take up before we get a final word from you. Brian, I'm going to ask you to comment on crude oil and Ukraine war. I'd like Ellen for you to take up the U.S. dollar and then the Federal Reserve and interest rates and the increase that they put in place yesterday and what we heard from them. A little bit wishy-washy about what they'll do in the future for you, Naomi Bloom. Brian Stark, I'll come back to you on that one to begin with. So crude oil has had a not-so-great week. What impact does that have across the whole of the marketplace? And is there anything new out of the Ukraine war that we should be concerned about?
Well, I think crude obviously is a tougher forecast for me. I should say they're both equally challenging. But from a crude perspective, certainly the rough week it's had, if crude can stay in decline, that certainly will help ethanol and gasoline demand, encourage driving. Obviously, prices have approached the $4 area here recently in East Central Illinois, and certainly that you're concerned about that as a usage standpoint through the summer. Will people continue to drive? So crude, it feels like until you see an increase in that demand, is going to stay relatively stagnant, in my opinion. I think when you look at the Ukraine situation, it's certainly a wild card. It's hard to say what Vladimir Putin is thinking now that they had a drone attack, and read about a potential nuclear antagonist or response. I think the agreement that they're trying to extend is a 50-50 proposition. I think in the end, they'll get something done just because it's to the benefit of both sides to not elevate things. But that's also a wild card in itself, that if they come back and certainly decide to drag their feet. You saw what wheat did here yesterday in reaction, and I think certainly that's an important corridor. While we do have the large crop Ellen mentioned earlier coming off the Safrinha crop in Brazil, it's certainly important that the Ukraine can be used to export supplies to a very tight world balance sheet as well.
Ellen Dearden, the strength of the dollar and the importance of it being the primary trade finance tool across the planet, and I'm thinking about the Brazil-China deal on that one.
The dollar index, if that's the way we're going to measure the dollar, has weakened since the front of the year, made a low in March, tried to rally, hasn't been able to do anything but stall out around 101. And I think it will continue to stay there. Certainly, China is pushing to remove the dollar as the favored currency and would like to move into something else. And of course, that something else is going to be the Chinese currency. Whether that happens or not, who knows? I really think that the deal is not just between Brazil and China to push the dollar out, but also Russia's in there as the third leg of this stool. And I think that we will continue to see the dollar stay on the weak side, which is to the benefit of our exports. Whether that holds true or not is yet to be seen.
And Naomi, you get to take up the broader perspective of the economy here in the United States and the Federal Reserve's quarter point raise in interest rates yesterday.
Yeah, that was, largely expected for the marketplace. Earlier in the week, there was still a little bit more of a risk-off mentality for the funds, and they were still being sellers of the marketplace. But now that we have interest rates to the highest level in 16 years, the Fed has now said, all right, we're going to probably just take a breath here and see what happens. But, you know, the 10th hike in 14 months is significant. Now they're going to really actually see what the chips are going to be falling after all of the activity that they've done. I know that in my community and in my network of peers, we have absolutely changed the way that we do our spending habits. We've changed the way we've done our grocery shopping. We are changing things up, and I'm keeping an eye on, is there going to be any cuts to middle class in terms of employment in any capacity? The town that I live in has a lot of factories and factory workers. So it's very curious to me to see how this all is going to play out when everything is said and done. I'm personally a little nervous that the Fed maybe did a little bit too much too aggressively. And I'm thinking of the ag community, you know, as Ellen had said earlier, with interest rates up, that really affects how farmers use their operating loans. And it's going to be very, very curious to see how this all ends up. Now, one thing to note in hindsight was that as the Feds increased interest rates, the funds started to leave commodities and put their money in other places. So if we see that the Feds truly stop raising interest rates, or maybe if they get to the point where they start reducing them, that might bring the funds back into the marketplace. And they, too, are watching fundamentals along with technicals, but so far they just haven't really been around. They've been like the kid on the playground, standing by the fence, just watching and waiting to see, you know, what activity is going to occur next. So definitely something to be watching and be mindful of in the coming months.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. We'll start with Brian Stark of the Andersons.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the call, my topics, I think growers need to be nimble and be ready to make sales both on old and new. There's going to be certainly basis opportunity on corn and soybeans on the old crop sector in the next 30 days. We need to take advantage of those and at the same time get some protection on some of our new crop that just got planted.
Ellen Dearden from Ag Review.
I'm going to be watching fund activity and what positions the funds take. It is highly unusual, but funds are a little short the corn market. That's typically not the case in this spring time period with plenty of weather ahead of us.
And Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing.
Yep, I agree with everything just said. One thing I'd add, of course, keep an eye on the Black Sea region and the grain corridor. There's definitely a lot of drama going on, and now that Putin's trying to pull the United States into it, saying that we were helping Ukraine with the recent bombing on the Kremlin, the waters are getting murky again. And there's also a G7 summit supposed to be happening on Friday, May 19th, a day after the corridor expires. So there's a lot of moving parts here in addition to just our regular grain market fundamentals and weather watching here in this country. If anything gets really excited again with the weather in the Black Sea region and with the happenings of the Black Sea region, as Ellen had said earlier, the funds are, you know, dramatically short wheat right now, over 100,000 contracts, and they're already short corn. So if there's any reason for them to cover those short positions, you're going to see the futures market for corn and wheat really start to work higher. So as you guys are all busy out in the fields planting, there are so many things happening in the U.S. and around the world that are just going to, you know, keep you on your toes as we go along here.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program on our website at willag.org. Just click and play from the website or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Naomi Bloom, Ellen Dearden, and Brian Stark. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.